Well, did you go out to eat this past weekend? How was it? Was it a great experience, or maybe, you know, something went wrong when you ate out? I tell you what, Larry Mueller here, by the way, for WPR News. Our guest today says that it's probably inevitable that sometime something's going to go wrong, but he also says that how we talk to our servers, how we order, how we behave when mistakes are made can make for a better dining out experience. And he's written a book about it. Here to share his tips on eating out, Adam Reiner. Adam's has worked for decades in some of the New York City's most popular restaurants. He's a food and drink writer whose latest book, I just finished reading it this past weekend, is titled The New Rules of Dining Out. And as we move along, I hope you'll join in with your experiences. What goes right when you eat out? What goes wrong? How have you maybe made a bad dinner turn out better? What do you think about tipping? Give us a call. The number 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. You can email to talk@wpr.org. Adam Reiner, welcome. Thanks for taking time to be with us today. Really appreciate it.
Hi, Larry. It's an honor to be with you. And also, before we start, I just wanted to wish you a congratulations on your forthcoming retirement. And I'm glad that I was able to sneak in before the wire to chat with you today.
Well, thank you. And I'm glad you're here. And I'm really glad you wrote that book. I learned a lot about it. In it, you write that restaurant guests should consider themselves as partners and not patrons. Expand. What do you mean? What did you mean by that?
Well, in writing the book, I always have had this sort of basic idea that I believe that dining out is a skill that can be improved. When people want to become better cooks, it's very easy. You go to the store, you buy cookbooks, you watch videos online, and you look to chefs for their expertise. And it feels like something that you can get better at. But nobody really thinks about dining out the same way. But having worked in the restaurant industry for over two decades and seen very up close and intimately the way that people behave in restaurants, I can tell you that there's a lot of room for improvement. And it's really not a matter of being nicer or more polite. It's really, I think, about being mindful, being engaged, understanding that you play an active role in the success or failure of your dining experiences. You know, hospitality, we tend to have very puritanical views of hospitality. You know, the customer is always right and all of these things. But I think that the world is changing. Restaurants are becoming more important. People's expectations are higher, and it puts a lot of pressure on the people that work in these spaces to razzle and dazzle you. And they're raising their game, you know, without a doubt. But it helps when you're also there to understand that you're coming along for the ride. You know, you're joining. You know, you're not just sitting in the back seat. You're jumping up front in the passenger seat.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I liked how you talk about kind of what goes on behind the scenes and sort of reminding us about a lot of things that are going on while you're there to have your dinner. A lot of the book is about communication. Let's get right to how do you engage, or how should you engage with your server, and how might it affect your service?
Well, first of all, I would say that it's very important to realize that your relationship with the people that are working in the restaurant begins the moment you walk in the door. If you walk up to the host stand or the podium and you say, "We're really excited to be here tonight," there's a pretty good chance that it's probably going to set you off on the right track. Yeah. So I think these moments of interaction with people at the table, for example, if a server comes over and welcomes you to the restaurant and you're texting on your phone and you miss the greet, that's a missed opportunity for you to have that connection. And we live in this world now where there's so much digital distraction, and people go to restaurants, they want to come away with social media capital and post on Instagram the dish that they just had in real time. So these are all, I think, impediments and obstacles to having that connection that is so important for hospitality to really work. So I want to encourage people to not just set down your phones, but understand that whoever it is that is taking care of you is going to be with you for probably 2 hours. that's a long time to be having a relationship with a stranger. So if in the rest of the world, you're walking around in your daily life and you're ignoring the person that you just met, chances are there's probably not going to be a great relationship developing between you. So the same rules apply, you know, in the restaurant as they do in real life. What makes you a great friend, lover, spouse, a coworker also makes you a great diner. But sometimes I feel like people get a little bit lax when they walk into these restaurant spaces and they assume that it's going to be like a massage table. But it really shouldn't be like that. It's an interactive piece of living theater. And you are always the main character.
Those phones, I once set my phone down on the table and I then the server comes by and I noticed that there were all four phones sitting on the table and she had no place right. to put the plate down. And you actually mentioned that in the book. And I thought, yeah, I took my, I said, let's get our phones off the table here.
Right.
Oh,
those little moments like that though. And you don't really realize it until you work in a restaurant. When somebody's trying to clear a plate and they reach over your shoulder, when you lean away from them to give them room, people that work in restaurants notice that. And when you don't, because you're distracted with your phone or whatever, they notice that too. So you really want to be the type of person that's always aware of what's going on around you and calibrating your behavior accordingly if you can.
How do you or how should you ask a server for recommendations? I think the points you make in the book were pretty good.
Well, too often I think people get a little bit lazy when it comes to their questions with waiters. They tend to ask things like, what's good here? Or what do you recommend? Or what's popular? And oftentimes those general questions lead to very general and vague answers. My best recommendation is for people to try to frame their questions about food based on their own personal preferences or whatever type of mood they're in that night. If you like seafood, for example, and you're looking at a list of main courses and they have everything from steak to mahi-mahi, it's much more helpful to your server to say, I'm looking for something a little bit on the lighter side. I really enjoy seafood dishes, maybe something with not too much cream or butter. Would you recommend the halibut or the striped bass? That is much more productive, I think, than asking, like, what is the server's favorite? And also, if you ask for the server's favorite, there's a chance that you and the server might not have the same sort of taste. So if they're recommending eggplant to me, I don't really like eggplant. So I'm probably going to be miserable if they recommend the grilled lamb with eggplant three ways. So the most important thing, I think, is for you to center your own preferences in your questions. And if you do that, the server should be guiding you into what you like instead of them guiding you into what they like.
You have waiter speak, which I kind of chuckled at.
Right.
What is waiter speak and how you interpret it?
Well, I think that waiter speak is something that I think has evolved because waiters need to be diplomats. You know, you don't want to recommend something if somebody says, would you choose between the two things? You don't want to recommend something and sort of dig your own grave when it turns out they order what you recommended and you hate it. So they'll try to find strengths in two different dishes that you recommend. Well, the striped bass is like one of our top sellers and people really love it. And the halibut is something that the chef just prepared with some seasonal ingredients. So you want to make sure that you're listening very carefully to what they're saying. If they're talking about something being popular and not being great, there's a chance that they might be trying to sway you to something else. If they're telling you that something like, oh, this is a really great dish if you like spicy, maybe they're trying to like warn you that it's something that if you have a low tolerance for spice, that you should keep away from it. So that chapter in the book is really trying to get people to understand the message beneath the message, which a lot of times if you can translate what the waiter is saying and understand that what they're saying on the surface is not exactly what they mean underneath it.
Yeah, there's some amusing. I thought, you know, I've heard those before, those statements from servers. I've heard them myself.
Right. And yeah, the most common one, I think, is the, can I get you anything else? When you finish your desserts and your coffees, that basically means it's time to go, especially when there's three deep people waiting at the bar and they need your table. So, you know, sometimes like in those moments, if you can notice that they're doing it instead of just being oblivious, you might say to the server, we're really having a great time. Is there any way you could move us up to the bar to have another round of drinks? So then you're giving a little and you're not just taking it all.
And tipping. Let's get in on tipping, because I think I had an experience once. This is a long time ago, when somebody was taking us out for dinner, and it was a very busy time. And I thought the waitress, the wait person, did a really good job given the circumstances. But the guy who was paying was so irritated, he was going to take it out on the server. Yeah. And as we're walking out, he said, "I didn't even leave her a tip." And I said, "Oh, I forgot my something." Yeah, I forget what I said, but anyway, I said I forgot something, and I go ahead, I'll catch up with you. And I went back in, and I put an appropriate tip down.
And you did this without even reading my book.
Yeah. So yeah, no, that's something I can't stand, because I know how much that person had tried hard, and it was. This happened many, many years ago. Actually, the person has passed away who did that, but which is why I feel like I can talk about it. But
I could feel my heart sinking when you were telling that story, because I've been on the receiving end of that sometimes, and it's really hard. You know, when you as a server work really hard to make people happy, there are times when they come into the restaurant miserable and they're determined to leave miserable. And there's only so much you can do as a server to make sunshine if somebody doesn't want to feel good about their experience. You know, the thing that I would say about it is that it's a really good, healthy habit to not think about tipping in terms of it being a reward or a punishment. Even if you feel like you've had bad service, like this gentleman obviously did, I think it's much more productive to tip fairly, which, you know, the base level for me would be 15%, but ideally it would be 18 to 20%. Tip fairly. And then if you really feel strongly about the fact that you felt like service was lacking or you were disappointed with your service experience, contact the restaurant the next morning. Sleep on it. Like, think about whether you really feel like you have a good case for saying that they were negligent. And if you do, in the next day, either give a call to the restaurant or send an email, lay out the things that you were disappointed. Give the restaurant an opportunity to make it right. I think too often people run to the internet to go on Yelp and be, you know, amateur food critics and weigh in. And, you know, this is just something that's not productive. You know, it doesn't help anyone to bash a restaurant online, especially now. And you never know what's going on behind the scenes at the restaurant. Maybe somebody got into a bad accident day of and they couldn't make it to work and they couldn't find a replacement. The restaurant may have been short-staffed, and this was the one night that you might have had that experience. Give them an opportunity to invite you back and do some nice things for you that might help reclaim the situation.
Adam Reiner, our guest today, he is the author of The New Rules of Dining Out. Questions, comments, experience to share, give a call at 800-642-1234. Email to talk at WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Talking today with Adam Reiner about his book. It's titled The New Rules of Dining Out. And I learned a lot, and I bet you will too when you get a chance to take a look at it. I'm one of these guys, because I'm in the radio business, I'm always on time or early. I mean, you just get that drilled into you after 59 years. But I'm wondering about late to a restaurant. I don't think I've ever been late to one, but people do get late. How late can you get away with?
Well, that's tricky. It depends, I think, from restaurant to restaurant. I think that what's important is that people realize what could potentially happen if you show up late to a restaurant.
Yeah.
You know, if you are, like, let's say, have a 5:30 reservation and you don't show up until like 5 to 6, your being late could potentially create a domino effect the rest of the evening, where the person that made a reservation at 7:45 to sit at your table after you is now stuck waiting at the bar because of your being late. So I think it's important that if you are late to a restaurant, that you show some sense of remorse about it, and then also accept if the restaurant is telling you that they need you to be out by a particular time. Respect that. You know, restaurants are one of the only places that I can think of where you could show up 30, 45 minutes late to something and expect to have a normal experience. If you have an appointment with the barber and you show up that late, you're not expecting them to cut your hair and then having their next client sit in the waiting room. If you show up at the doctor's office an hour late, you're not saying, like, I should be seen today. You're accepting an appointment or rescheduling for another day. So I think that if you are late and it happens, you get stuck in traffic, there's a family emergency, you know, restaurant people understand that and they try to be sensitive to that. Just understand that if it does happen, try to offer, you know, some sort of, be flexible in terms of like, okay, we don't mind if you move us to the bar area to have our desserts if you need to do that. Whenever you extend those olive branches like that, the people working in restaurants really do appreciate that. And it sends out the message, as I said at the beginning, that you look at yourself as a partner, not just a patron.
Emily in Albany has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Emily.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call. Adam, I have a question. If this is a faux pas or not, I have a habit that after we're done eating at a restaurant, I just kind of clean up the table. I stack the dishes as best I can. I've had a lot of people I dine with get really upset with me for doing that, saying that's the waiter's job and you shouldn't do that. And should I not be doing this?
That's a good question. I think I would say that you should only really be doing that if you are kind of looking to the server's like actions as a guide to how you're helping, instead of sort of taking control of the situation. Like, servers don't really need helpers. You know, the people who are like, you know, constantly stacking plates and handing over plates. Like, if it's incessant, it's kind of like being at the grocery store. Have you ever had that experience where you put your groceries on the conveyor belt and you start to move things on the line to help the person and the cashier kind of snaps at you to like leave it there? You know, like they know how to do their job. They're accustomed to sort of the repeatable movements of, you know, the muscle memory of working in those jobs. And so, you know, I would say that it's what helps in that situation is like if you have a side dish that is in the middle of the table and it's out of reach of the person serving you trying to clear it. If you pick up that plate or if you put the spoon on top of the plate and then help to hand it over, that action alone is enough. And so what I would say is if you're doing that, do it in moderation and try to do it in a way that it's like thoughtful and not like you're trying to be one of the team. Like, they don't need you to be one of the team. They just need you to like be a decent person and again, be, you know, somewhat kind and to be engaged and compliant.
All right, Emily, thank you. Scott in Sun Prairie, your turn. Hi, Scott.
Hi. I guess just a story about my wife who's taught me a lot about interacting with servers and how to set the tone. When the server comes to our table, usually when we're in a nice restaurant, they'll introduce themselves. Let's say something like, "Hi, I'm Dave. I'm your server tonight." She always looks up at him and says, "Hi, I'm Liz. I'll be your customer tonight." It's a great way to gauge the person's mood. We've had servers react from being totally nonplussed to really being interactive. You can see that they're going to be a fun server to work with that night.
Interesting. What's your reaction there, Adam?
I write about the introduction in my book. And one of my rules is to never ask the server their name without introducing yourself first. And so, you know, what this gentleman says, I think is, I welcome that. If a server comes over and introduces themselves, then I think it's great for you to tell them your name. You know, it sends out a message that you view yourself as equals, which is really why when people say, "What's your name?" and they don't introduce themselves, to the waiter's mind, I think oftentimes it makes them feel like they just want to know the name of the person that they're going to be bossing around all night long. So I really don't recommend... I don't think it's necessary really to make the introduction the first thing that happens at the table. In fact, I think it's much better to let the relationship develop, talk about the cocktail menu, ask for recommendations about the food, and then maybe by the third interaction say, "Hey, we really appreciate your service. You've been great tonight. My name is Adam. What's your name?" it's a totally different thing than when they come over the table asking all of these intrusive questions. You know, people think oftentimes that asking, being inquisitive about the server is something that humanizes them, that it builds solidarity. It's actually the opposite. If the server comes over the table and you've never met them before and you start peppering them questions like, where are you from? Where else? What other restaurants did you work in? That can be really uncomfortable and awkward for the server. And it can put them in a situation where they feel like they have to answer these personal situation or questions because of the situation. And that's really not that's not a position that you would want to put them in ideally.
What kind of special requests are reasonable to expect? I can remember calling a very high-end restaurant when I was doing three interviews over three nights with three different candidates, and I wanted it at that fancy restaurant. And rather than have somebody else call, I called to explain my situation to them and saying, okay, we're going to be interviewing people, a person, there's four of us, and I want to do this three nights in a row at your restaurant. Could you find me a table where, you know, where we're not going to be bothering other people if we chat? They were quite accommodating, and I tipped, over-tipped every single night of that, and we got great service. But so I was asking a kind of a, can I have the same table? Is it a table, you know, where we can converse, still have a nice view of the Capitol and all that? Mm-hmm. Something like that, I felt like I had to do it myself rather than have somebody else do it for me. Mm-hmm. They took that as a reasonable request, but
I think to answer your question, that every restaurant has a different sort of set of circumstances in terms of what they can or can't do. So anytime we're interacting with a restaurant, I think it's a mistake to assume that everybody is on equal footing. If it's a 60-seat restaurant that has a tiny kitchen with two cooks in it, that's not the same as a 300-seat restaurant that has three private dining rooms and a huge kitchen with 15 people on the line. So, you know, I think the most important thing is that you respect when people are saying, like, we're not able to do this. Understand that when restaurants have these rules, like if we don't seat parties over six people, it's not because they're trying to be inhospitable. It's because they know that their facility and the way that their kitchen operates makes it impossible for them to deliver the type of experience for a party of more than six that they would like to. So, you know, people oftentimes they don't accept those rules and they try to, instead of being able to book an eight top, they book two four tops and they try to get them to stick them together. Like, please don't do that. Like, you know, respect the rules, understand that, you know, in my opinion, the best rule of thumb is to always approach your restaurant visits as though you're walking into someone's home. If you walk into someone's home and they ask you to take your shoes off, you don't say, no, I'm good. I'll keep them on. Like, so there's really no reason that you should do that in restaurants either. When restaurants are often a product of someone's personal, like, family history, the cuisine of their nationality, a reflection of their culinary journey, you know, we should always kind of walk into these spaces with a sense of reverence and respect for that. And that really means that when we're presented with whatever rules that we don't necessarily agree with, that we shrug it off and respect the fact that it's probably for a good reason.
Oh, man, Adam. I tell you what, we've just scratched the surface of your book. It was so much fun to read. Thank you so much for being with us today. I appreciate it. I hope a lot of people take a look at it. Thank you, Adam.
Thank you, Larry. Good to talk to you.
Adam Reiner, the author of The New Rules of Dining Out. Take a look at it. I think you're going to enjoy reading it. We haven't covered it all here for sure today. Big thanks to our group that worked to put this show together. Jeff Robbins did a lot of work on this program. But Lee Rayburn's a big help. So's Clara Neipert and Joel Patnaud and our executive producer, Jill Nadeau. I'm Larry Mueller, and thank you so much for listening. Stay with us. Lots more in store here on WPR News.